The information discussed on this show is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. All content is for general informational purposes only.
It's Guy's Guy Radio. Here's your host, Robert Manny.
Welcome to Guy's Guy's Radio. This is your host, Robert Manny, welcoming you to the show where men and women can be at their best and everyone wins. Guys, Guys Radio. We're here to inform you, inspire you, empower you, and get you to think, feel, and who knows, maybe even act by virtue of the journeys, stories, experiences, and insights of the guests I bring you each and every week to the show. Once again, this week is no exception. Today, we're going to talk about one of the most brilliant minds in the history of mankind. Now, when you think of brilliant minds, you might think of Leonardo da Vinci, you might think of Albert Einstein, but do you think of Nikola Tesla? Tesla is an individual who was involved in so many acts of incredible intellectual and technological breakthroughs, yet he's kind of misunderstood, and now we've got the Tesla's car today, and we've got Elon Musk, and people don't even necessarily make the connection between the name Tesla and the man, Nikola Tesla, who lived in the 20th century and was involved in so many things, from the rotating magnetic field to lasers, dematerialization devices, death rays, harnessing the power of water through the Niagara Falls, remote-controlled robotics, telegraphy, communicating with other planets, just so much he worked on, a death ray, and also working with various governments around the world in terms of helping them with their defense, trying to find some defense systems that could supersede and overarch any type of enemy systems that may have been out there, including what we faced during World War II. So he's an amazing man. And my special guest is a return guest, Dr. Mark J. Cipher. He's written three or four books on Tesla, and the new one is called The Man Who Harnessed Niagara Falls. So we're going to get into all of that and lots more about Nikola Tesla right here on Guys Guys Radio.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, Guys Guys Radio, it is the interview portion of our show, and today we're going to talk about Nikola Tesla with probably one of the world's foremost experts on Nikola Tesla and a return guest to Guys Guys Radio, a wonderful man, Mark J. Cipher, PhD, the author of over 100 articles and a dozen books, including the acclaimed book about Tesla, Wizard, The Life and Times of Nikola Tesla. He wrote a book, and we spoke about it on Guys Guys Radio, about ozone therapy, treatment for viruses, and his latest book, Tesla, Wizard of War. But we're going to talk about a new book that is actually kind of an update of a book that came out about two decades ago, but it's fascinating. It's called Nikola Tesla, the man who harnessed Niagara Falls. We're going to get into all of that today. Let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Cipher. He's lectured at every international Tesla conference held in Colorado Springs. He's spoken at Brandeis University, the Federal Reserve Bank in Boston, Lucasfilms. He's been featured in the Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, Scientific American, MIT's Technological Review, New York Times. He's been on Coast to Coast Radio, the BBC, NPR's All Things Considered, and in the five-part limited series, The Tesla Files, which he helped create, which has gone out to 40 countries and played on the History Channel. And I'm sure there's a lot more, but we'll let Mark talk about it right now here on Guys Guys Radio. So welcome back to Guys Guys Radio, Mark J. Cipher. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Robert. So good to see you again.
My pleasure. And wow, you've got this new book, which is not a necessarily new book, but it's a new version of it because you've got all kinds of photos and all kinds of updated information. Tell us a little bit about the new book, why you decided to revisit this work from a few years ago and added all these wonderful photos, because there's a lot that's been written about Nikola Tesla, but there's not been a lot of photos and pictures and signed letters from Mark Twain and other people. What inspired you to get back and kind of redo this book and relaunch it? Because it is spectacular.
A lot had to do with the show that we did, the Tesla Files, which is five shows, which now is on Amazon. And once I did the show, it literally did go out to 40 different countries. So people from all over the world contacted me and sent me information. Plus, I had to come up with new information for the show. So when I did all that, I wrote this other book called, you know, Tesla Wizard at War, which is this book.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And for various reasons, the publisher decided not to put any pictures in the book. And so I was, you know, naturally disappointed. It's a great book, and it's a whole different take.
Very good book.
Later in life. And I had written another book called Nikola Tesla, The Man Who Harnessed Niagara Falls, which was a small book. It was only 50 pages. And I took it to Niagara Falls. Lois and I went up there, and we sold it to various places. But that was in the early 1990s. And so I decided to update the book. I doubled the size. It's about 120 pages. And I put in a lot of the images that had never been seen before or rarely been seen. For instance, in 1906, when Tesla thought that he had received pulse frequencies from outer space, there was an article in The American, a magazine called The American, and there were drawings of what the extraterrestrials from Mars would look like. So I have that picture in the book. I also have a letter signed by Franklin Roosevelt with his big famous signature from 1915 when he was Assistant Secretary of the Navy. This is a very interesting story because Marconi sued the U.S. Navy for patent infringement. Tesla at that time in 1915 was working for Telefunken. So there were two big wireless organizations. There was Telefunken and there was Marconi's wireless show, wireless enterprise. So the U.S. Navy tested all of the different equipment and they decided that the German company had a better wireless system, which was really Tesla's system. Tesla was working for Telefunken. So Marconi felt that he had been infringed upon. He came in on the Lusitania and he testified before in court in Brooklyn. Actually, he gave a deposition. And before he was actually going to testify, he was called back because the war began. So it was okay for the Navy to have the German wireless system before we got into the war. And so this letter, which is signed by Franklin Roosevelt when he's Assistant Secretary of the Navy, says, I have looked at all the literature and Nikola Tesla's patents predate Marconi. Let's use Tesla. And Tesla actually testified at this litigation. So I have that letter. And then I have another letter signed by Franklin Roosevelt when he's president 30 years later, when he wants to meet with Tesla for the particle beam weapon. So it's signed by Franklin Roosevelt. That letter appeared in the Tesla files. But then I have a third letter signed by Franklin Roosevelt to Eleanor Roosevelt right after Tesla died, thanking her for all the documents and that he was returning the documents to her, which suggests that Eleanor Roosevelt told her husband, I think you should speak with Tesla because of his particle beam weapon. So those are some of the images that I have in the book.
Let's do a quick, just a level set for our audience. Everybody's heard the name Tesla, obviously, with everything going on in the world, in the country right now with Elon Musk and the Tesla vehicles. Everybody knows about it. But let's go back to the person, Nikola Tesla. He grew up in Croatia. How did he come over to the States and what was kind of his first breakthrough in terms of things he was working on?
Tesla's father was a priest and his father wanted him to become a priest. He wanted to become an electrical engineer. And he went to Göttingen, which is in it's in Austria. It's kind of like the MIT of Europe. It's a very high level college. And he went for a year or so. And he was afraid to be inducted into the service. So he basically hid out in the mountains and saw horrible things. He saw decapitation and terrible, terrible things because of the war between the Croats, the Serbs, and the Bosnians. And then he returned, and his father still wanted him to be a priest. But he said, Dad, I really want to be an electrical engineer. And then he caught the flu, and he was close to death. And the father relented, says, okay, I'll let you be an electrical engineer. So he went to the University of Prague. And in Prague, he was a top mathematical student and learned various different languages. And when he was in college, he met Professor Poschel, who was his professor, physics professor, and he had an electrical dynamo. In those days, electricity was direct current. But what Tesla knew and what Poschel explained is that electricity by its nature changes its direction of flow. So electricity in its natural state keeps going back and forth. So the idea would be to try and make a wheel go in one direction. So suppose you had a water wheel and you had a river going downstream, then upstream, then downstream and upstream at thousands of times per second. How could you make the water wheel go in one direction? Everyone thought it was impossible. So they used a commutator, which removed the upstream. And Tesla had a vision that you could remove that. You didn't need the commutator, that you could somehow harness AC all by itself. He spent the next 5 years of daily concentration, and he figured out how to do away with the commutator, which I explain in the new book. Mm-hmm. And basically, he came up with the idea of having two currents out of phase with each other. And if you time it correctly, you can make the water wheel go in one direction. So the difference between DC, which is what Edison was using, is you could only send electricity about a mile with power dropping off over distance and then only for lighting homes. With AC, if you put it at Niagara Falls, which they did, you could light up the entire Northeast, you know, Boston, Philadelphia, Chicago, Toronto. And not only could you light homes, but you could run factories. So it was the difference between a horse and buggy and a rocket ship. And Tesla had invented the rocket ship. And I think that really is his greatest invention.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So in the book's about Niagara Falls. So tell us about how he learned to harness this and what happened when he, I think, was powering part of that area, that geographic area. But what happened? How come this technology didn't kind of just take over, if you will?
Yeah, what happened was he was working for Edison, and he tried to explain this to Edison. And Edison said, how can you make a current going in two different directions, make the water? He just couldn't understand Tesla's thing. And so they got into an argument, and Tesla ended up quitting. And Westinghouse understood that Tesla had invented something great. And so Westinghouse took $1 million loss to harness the Chicago World's Fair of 1893. And it was the first fair lit by the Tesla systems, called, you know, the White City. This was 1893. About a year or two before that, C.E.L. Brown and Dobrowolski in Europe, Brown was in Switzerland and Dobrowolski was in Germany, 110 miles away. The two of them sent an electrical current from Switzerland to Germany and ran a motor. Now, again, this in the prevailing era at this moment, all you could do was light a home and power dropping off of a distance over like just 1 mile. And it was all coal operated. So there was a lot of pollution in the atmosphere. So Dobrowolski said, I just invented this great invention. I can send electrical power 100 miles. And a lot of people were thinking that Dobrowolski invented the AC polyphase system. And C.E.L. Brown, who was an honest guy, said, no, we simply followed Tesla's patents. So this established when J.P. Morgan and Adams and the other financiers were going to fund Niagara Falls, they realized that they had to deal with Westinghouse. Morgan was backing Edison, and he combined the Edison company with Elihu Thompson to create General Electric. Edison was so incensed that he left the electrical field and went into making motion pictures. And Westinghouse had the gold mine. He had Tesla's patents. But because of the war of the currents and all the legal shenanigans that GE was doing against, saying Dobrowolski was the inventor or other people, Steinmetz was the inventor, they were afraid that they weren't able to fund all this because they had to pay Tesla royalty. So Tesla ripped up the royalty contract, right, which cost him millions of dollars. And that freed up the contract, and they ended up winning the right to harness Niagara Falls. And in 1897, Tesla spoke at Niagara Falls as the inventor, and his name is on the patent plaque 9 times. And at that moment, in 1897 through the early 1900s, he was one of the most famous people in the world.
And then, wow, amazing story. My special guest on Guys, Guys Radio, Dr. Mark J. Seifer. We're talking about the latest book, Nikola Tesla, The Man Who Harnessed Niagara Falls. And we're talking about that right now. So continue with the story. It's so fascinating. So what happened? Why hasn't the Tesla technology really taken over? How did the different governments look at Tesla? I know he kind of got pushed and pulled in different directions and taken advantage of and kind of bad-mouthed and stuff. And he didn't really, in his lifetime, really prosper the way he should have prospered. And everything was kind of a battle to do the work he was doing. And we're still looking at his technology now and saying, oh my God, this guy was really onto something.
Yeah, there's so many aspects to this, because before he came in, there were three major companies, Edison, L.U. Thompson, and Westinghouse, and they were all using the commutator, and they were all coal-operated. So there were 3,000 coal-operated local power plants just for one every mile across the Northeast. So the pollution was tremendous. Tesla's system runs on a waterfall. It's renewable energy, and it's a clean energy system. And when you really think about it, he talked about harnessing the wheel work of nature. He believed in what Goethe talked about, that all the secrets, if you study the secrets of nature, you will come up with these great inventions. For instance, if you study how birds fly, you invent the airplane. It's another example of that. So Tesla invented a clean energy system, renewable system. It is the utopian dream. So the electrical power grid that we have today is unchanged. It's the same as it was back in 1897 when Tesla spoke. But he had a better idea. He said, we don't need the electrical wires. I can jump electricity across continents by means of wireless. And Stetson, who was working, Francis Lynn Stetson, who was working for J.P. Morgan, read his speech ahead of time and pulled him off the stage when he gave the first three quarters of his speech, but didn't allow him to give his punchline that you think Niagara Falls is great. I got something even better. And so Stetson kind of saved Tesla. So now Tesla was trying to now transmit electrical power. And that's really the question you were asking. Can we transmit electrical power from, say, Niagara Falls to Paris or to London? And Tesla would say yes.
Okay. And why aren't we doing this now? How much of his technology are we using?
Part of the reason is because Marconi beat Tesla in sending the first impulse across the Atlantic Ocean. He sent it mostly through the airwaves. And so we have the idea of radio, and you see the radio tower, beep, 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 and you're sending it through the airwaves. Tesla said the better way to send it is to drive it down into the earth. So when you look at a picture of Tesla's tower, you know, I'll show you the picture of it.
Mm-hmm. Mark's grabbing the book for our video watchers, but if you're listening, the tower is it looks like, describe what it looks like, Mark. You do it better than I do.
Well, it kind of looks like a mushroom.
Okay, yep.
This is how it would have looked if it had been completed.
So you get it's an orb on top. It's a vertical like tower with an orb on top.
So you get the feeling that the power is being transmitted off the top of the tower, but that's not how it works at all. It took me many years to realize that. Mm-hmm. He's collecting the energy at the top of the tower and then driving it down into the earth. And he felt that it worked by conduction instead of radiation. So Marconi was sending it through radiation. You know, when you get in the car, that radio station, after about 30 miles from the radio, it disappears.
Right.
And so when Tesla was working for Telefunken in 1915, he goes to Sayville, Long Island, which is not far from his place at Wardenclyffe. And he tells the electrical engineers there, you need to increase your ground connection. You're wasting all your energy sending it through the airwaves. And a couple of weeks later, the New York Times reported that Telefunken tripled its power and it's now the most powerful wireless station on the planet. So I think that one article from the New York Times from 1915 about Telefunken tripling its power establishes that Tesla is probably right, that there is a better way to send electrical energy, but it's been usurped in so many ways now. We have satellites. We don't really need to send it that way. So I think partly that was another reason. And the other reason, of course, when he built Wardenclyffe, he ran out of money with Morgan, and he asked for more money to complete the tower. And since Marconi had transmitted an impulse across the Atlantic Ocean, Morgan said, "What am I spending all this money on this when this other guy has already done it?" And so an inferior system that Marconi had, which could only send dots and dashes, evolved. Tesla's system was the basis for sending voice and pictures, radio and television. It's based on Tesla waves, not Marconi's waves. But it took Marconi and the rest of the world through the 1920s, 30s, and all the way through the 50s and 60s before the Tesla system really took over. But people didn't realize it was Tesla's system because it had, so many different inventors came along the way after that, DeForest and so many others.
Absolutely amazing. Let me ask you this, Mark. What drew you to Tesla? Because you have really, the core of your work in the last couple of decades has been focused on Tesla. You are one of the world's experts on that. Tell us how you got into that and how it led you to the History Channel and now Amazon series.
Yeah, I was doing research on a Tibetan Lama. His name is Lobsang Rampa. And when you find, I didn't know till the third book that this Tibetan Lama was dead and that Cyril Hoskins, a British plumber, had wanted to die around World War II, around that time. And Rampa wanted to live, so they swap souls and Rampa takes over Cyril Hoskins' body and writes all these books. It's a crazy story, but the books are really good. Lobsang Rampa, very good book. So I was writing articles for Ancient Astronauts magazine. And I went down to New York to research about Rampa. And I came across a book about avatars, enlightened beings. One of them was Rampa, one of them was Jesus Christ, and another was a guy I'd never heard of, Tesla. And it said that Tesla was born from the planet Venus, and he invented fluorescent lighting, wireless communication, remote control, the induction motor, a hydroelectric power system. And his name was Tesla. And I said, I thought the Rampa story was crazy, but this is even crazier. And so when I came back to Rhode Island, Howard Smuckler, who was the editor of the magazine, said, "Oh, I know Tesla." He gave me a biography of Tesla. And then I purchased a 1,000-page book of his patents, lectures, and articles. And once I saw that he had patents, I knew this was 1976. I was sitting on a huge story. And he became the subject of my doctoral dissertation as to why his name disappeared from the history books. And his name disappeared, what we're talking about, for two really big reasons. One is the Tesla motor became the Westinghouse motor. So we started to know Westinghouse's name. And Marconi became famous in wireless. I think of Bausch and Lomb. Who invented contact lenses? I don't know, but I know contact lenses. Who invented the mouse? I don't know, but I know Stephen Jobs' name. So Tesla's name got lost because he was an inventor, but he wasn't the corporate owner of the product. And then because of Elon Musk, he resurrected Tesla's name by keeping his name on the car company, which he had purchased with that name. And the reason why that car company even came into existence was the two inventors of the Tesla Roadster had read an article that Tesla wrote in 1904 suggesting that the electric motor was the best way to have a car. So that's why they named it Tesla Roadster, because they were actually following Tesla's idea all the way back from 1904 to create an electric car instead of a car that ran on gasoline.
Now, interesting with Tesla was a real believer in the power and in the good power of electricity. And I've been reading recently that some say, and I'm just saying what I read, is that if you sit in some water and you have a very, very light electric current in it, it's very good for the body. Obviously, please don't do it, audience, because we don't know how much you need. But the point is that electricity can be a really healthy thing for us and a good thing. And Tesla was kind of onto that. Anything that you studied in that area, Mark?
Yes, I'm very interested, and you mentioned into the immune system. And ozone is created, if you zap oxygen, which is O2, with electricity, you can get O3. O3 is a powerful disinfectant. It also creates the ozone layer, which protects the Earth every day. It's created from cosmic rays. Without the ozone layer, there would be no life on the Earth. So when a person has a disease, we have a very powerful immune system, and we have what's called macrophages, which surround the virus or surround the bacteria. What is the chemistry inside the macrophage to kill the viruses? The macrophage uses a number of different enzymes. One of them is hydrogen peroxide. Another is ozone. And so what I think is, I think the electrical, that the body, which has electrical current in it, our immune system has probably learned how to zap O2, which we breathe in, and water, H2O, and change it into O3, which is all that ozone is. So we're using our own immune system is using it, and we're using it in combination with electricity.
Unbelievable.
I think there's a Nobel Prize there. I think if I have in this ozone book, I have a Harvard study where they located that a zebrafish produced hydrogen peroxide, and they located the very gene that manufactures hydrogen peroxide. I think if a biochemist can locate the very gene that manufactures ozone in our immune system, that I think that person had a shot at a Nobel Prize.
Unbelievable. Now, on the flip side of that, with Tesla's inventive and his use of electricity and understanding so much about it, he came up with some concepts about a particle beam weapon, which I think has been, they have some of that technology now. It might be different than what Tesla was working on. But what happened when Tesla was kind of putting his weapon together in World War II? And obviously the government started to get interested in them because they wanted to get the upper hand.
Yeah, I'm working with my partner, Tim Eaton. He's a screenplay writer. He was a visual effects editor at Lucasfilms. That's why I spoke at Lucasfilms. And we have a number of film scripts that we've created, and one has to do with the particle beam weapon. And when I wrote it, Wizard at War, what I was thinking about was Franklin Roosevelt. Roosevelt wants to meet with Tesla in 1943, shortly, unfortunately, before Tesla dies. Why does he want to meet with him? The big problem in World War II was the atomic bomb. And Vannevar Bush was the head of secret weapons development for the American government. Matthew Modine played him in the movie Oppenheimer. And Vannevar Bush comes in to speak to Franklin Roosevelt. I have all the details on this. And says, "We're very afraid. Our scientists think that the Germans are a year ahead of us in building the atomic bomb." So he says, "We probably will build one by 1945, but they're going to probably have one in early 44. He happened to have been wrong, but that's what their scientists thought at that time. And what I believe is that they knew about von Braun, who had rocket ships going over, bombing London. And they were planning on sending it, von Braun, along the ionosphere where he could hit New York and he could hit Washington, D.C. from Germany. If they had a small atomic bomb, they didn't know how big or small these things would be. Maybe you needed Tesla's death ray to shoot down the possibility of sending an atomic bomb. So that's some of the dramatic thing that we deal with in the film.
How did that work, his death? What was the concept for the technology behind the death ray? And is anything like that being used now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. What's interesting about this story and what I uncovered is that Tesla was negotiating with General Andrew McNaughton. General Andrew McNaughton was the head of secret weapons development for the Canadian government, essentially for the British Empire. If you Google him, you'll see him sitting next to Churchill. It's also in my book on Niagara Falls. He was Churchill's right arm. He was third in line to be the head of Allied forces after Eisenhower and Mountbatten. Vannevar Bush is flying in to Washington, D.C. to meet with Franklin Roosevelt and also with Vannevar Bush. And he's also negotiating with Tesla, sending physicists to the Hotel New Yorker to try and learn how the particle beam weapon works. The way the particle beam weapon works is through repulsion. Have you ever played with two magnets where you get the two opposites and you cause one to bounce away from the other one?
Yeah.
That's what he did. So he has a cannon where he has, like the Van de Graaff generator, he has a belt of negative charges, negative ions going around and around. And then he puts little tiny tungsten particles, also negatively charged, inside the cannon like bullets. And they get repelled out. They get shot out at 300 miles a second. So you have this tiny little stream, like a laser beam, of these particles where you could take down planes. That was the theory And that's what he explains to General McNaughton and also to Ralph Bergstresser, who I interviewed, who was working for Franklin Roosevelt at the time, who came in to Tesla's place at the Hotel New Yorker and told him the details of it. So today we have what's known as the railgun. The railgun is based on the exact same principle of electrical repulsion. So instead of sending a huge cannon out the, you know, as a military weapon, you can repel smaller objects for a lot less, you know, you don't need dynamite, you don't need all those, you just use electrical energy and the force of repulsion. So that basically is the secret behind the particle beam weapon.
Unbelievable. My special guest on Guys Guys Radio, welcoming back Dr. Mark J. Cipher. We're talking about his new book, Nikola Tesla, The Man Who Harnessed Niagara Falls. You know, it's interesting. You mentioned Vander Bush, something about one of the Bush. Is that related to the Bushes? And also, I believe Donald Trump's uncle, John Trump, kind of got hold of the Tesla files after Tesla passed. Is this true that this Tesla had some type of connection with both Bush and Trump?
Yeah, Vannevar Bush is not related to the two presidents.
Okay.
But he was the dean of the physics department at MIT. And in 1931, Vannevar Bush wrote Tesla a happy birthday card. Tesla got a happy birthday card from Albert Einstein and five other Nobel Prize winners, and another person was Vannevar Bush. One of the people in the physics department at MIT was John G. Trump, who was working with Van de Graaff, who was an expert on high-frequency phenomena. And he was an excellent choice after Tesla died to look at Tesla's particle beam weapon and any other secret papers that he had. So after Tesla died in 1943, Vannevar Bush assigned John G. Trump to look through Tesla's papers. And that became known as the Trump Report, which I had in the early 1990s.
And this was Trump's uncle, right? Donald Trump's uncle?
Yeah. Now, I knew Donald Trump. Wow. I didn't personally know him, but everyone knew Donald Trump. He's a real estate agent in New York City. Mm-hmm. And I had the Trump Report. I didn't tie the two together. I just thought they had the same name. When we were shooting the Tesla files back in 2017 and 18, it was uncovered that it was President Trump's uncle. So his father's brother is John G. Trump. So that's the connection. This is all taking place before President Trump was born. But it's an amazing connection between President Trump and Nikola Tesla, because the most important person looking through his papers after he died was John G. Trump.
Amazing. Tell us about your experience in working on the Tesla files, and if you learned anything that you weren't aware of while being part of that series.
What did I learn? Well, what I did, I had to come up with new material because I was helping writing the television show, The Tesla Files. I looked at John G. Trump's Trump Report, which I had, and I have his signature. I don't own the original, obviously, but I have copies of it. And I looked at the letterhead. And the letterhead had all these different people. And I went into the backgrounds of all these different people. And Vannevar Bush's name is not on the letterhead, but he was the head of, it's called the NDRC, National Defense Research Council. And that's who, he was. All of these people, though, you know, the head of Bell Labs is on there. They were all also working on the Manhattan Project. So that tied me in my head to, wow, this must have been what was going on, that they were very concerned. The people that were building the atomic bomb were very worried that the Germans would be ahead of us. And if the Germans actually delivered an atomic bomb, how could we, you know, knock that thing out of the sky? And so Tesla's particle death ray, the particle beam weapon, became very famous. There was a controversy about it. The head of Bell Labs was dismissive of Tesla. John Trump was kind of dismissive of Tesla. And I think Eleanor Roosevelt and another person, his name was General L.C. Craigie, who was the first military person to fly a jet plane. He was a general at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And another guy named Dwight Fitzgerald. Those three in particular were telling Franklin Roosevelt, don't dismiss Tesla. This guy had been a genius in the past. And he thinks he's got a death ray. and we may very well need this. And the interesting thing is that I think Roosevelt would then think back, you know, come to think of it, back in 1915, I had to rely on Tesla when Marconi sued the U.S. Navy. So there's that tie-in, you know, which is played out in our screenplay. And also, I think in reality, I think that that's really what was going on.
Did Tesla work on, I know there's some discussion in the book about space and time. Did he work on wormholes or time travel or anything in that area?
He had something called his dynamic theory of gravity. And it took me 10 years to figure out what the heck it was. There's something called the God particle. The God particle is the particle that gives matter its mass. How do we get mass into matter? What Tesla was saying was that when we jump up, why do we come back to the Earth? I always thought we were attracted to the Earth. That's not what Tesla was saying. Tesla was saying is that all matter is absorbing the ether, etheric energy, all of the time. So if the Earth is absorbing a tremendous amount of ether all of the time, the reason we fall back to the Earth when we jump up is we're in the way of this influx. And so I got one of my favorite books was 30 Years That Shook Physics by George Gamow, G-A-M-O-W. He's, you know, he works with Einstein and Bohr and Sommerfeld and all the, I mean, he's one of the forefathers of quantum physics. And in his book, on about 100 page 20, he says that Goudsmit and Uhlenbeck learned that for electrons to manufacture or generate electromagnetism, they had to spin faster than the speed of light. This was discovered in 1925. This violated the theory of relativity. So Dirac came along and said, let's change all that. Let's call our particle spin the square root of negative one, an imaginary number. And when you change it to the square of negative one, you can combine Einstein's theory of relativity with quantum physics. And Dirac got a Nobel Prize for combining the two. But they avoided Goudsmit and Uhlenbeck's discovery that particles spin faster than the speed of light. So what I think, I tried to combine, which I did, Tesla's theory, dynamic theory of gravity, that all matter is absorbing energy all the time. That's the God particle. If electrons are absorbing energy all the time and spinning faster than the speed of light and generating electromagnetism, that's grand unification. Einstein spent 40 years of his life trying to combine gravity with electromagnetism. I'm not an advanced mathematician, but I think conceptually, I created grand unification by studying Tesla's dynamic theory and linking it up to what Gamow wrote in his book about Goudsmit and Uhlenbeck about particle spin. So I learned a tremendous amount about the fundamental structure of space. What Tesla was saying, you know, you look at a galaxy, it's floating in something. You know, that's the ether. And Tesla is, in his literature, he's saying that the ether, which even Einstein actually believed in, is oscillating at a tachyonic rate faster than the speed of light. It's an alternating current that's oscillating very rapidly, and it's generating physical matter, the God particle, through some type of ether absorption, which is Tesla's dynamic theory of gravity. So all of that is, you ask why I'm interested in Tesla. You just constantly learn new and new things.
Absolutely,
you know?
Amazing. So if Tesla was alive now, Mark, and you had the good fortune to meet him, and you know so much about him, what were some questions you'd ask him? What would you ask him about?
I'd ask him if my theory of grand unification is correct, whether I've solved Einstein's dream. I would ask him, is there a real reason why we should still try to transmit power through wireless means, or satellites and the system we have today still okay? He invented the ozone generator. I think that studying the immune system is the secret to how we can protect ourselves from emerging viruses. He was very aware of all of that kind of stuff. So I would ask him about, would he be interested in studying the immune system since he did invent an ozone generator, which he sold to medical personnel. So I would ask him about medical things. And I would also ask him how he feels seeing that we now have our cell phones and all that, which he predicted basically back in 1905 and 6.
How about space travel? I mean, for him, You know, if you think about it, in our lifetime, Mark, you know, the cars are pretty much the same. I mean, they've gotten hot. Now we have the electric cars, but for 50 years, everything was pretty much the same. Some little updates here and there. Air travel, nothing different now than when I was a kid, except we don't even have the Concorde. What do you think that he would be working on if he was alive now? Because this, it seems like our culture moves at a very snail-like pace, and there may be a lot of technology that certain people have, and they're used, it's used in certain ways. How do you think his genius would be deployed if he was alive now?
In the 1930s and late 20s, he was trying to sell the Navy his flivver plane, which is a plane that takes off like a helicopter and then rotates the propeller into the airplane position. That is the Osprey helicopter, which is
Right.
based on
Yep. I see
Tesla's
them all the
invention.
time.
And what's interesting to me is that the head of Bell Labs, who was dismissing Tesla, his name was Dewison, he was. The Bell Labs is the people that developed the Osprey, so they must have known about Tesla's patents, well, because John Trump had uncovered these patents. So I think Tesla might still be very interested in trying to talk us into a hovercraft, some way that we can, so we'd have airplane, small airplanes instead of just our car. That if where I live in Rhode Island, if I wanted to get to Long Island, I could, in theory, just go across the Long Island Sound in my little car. So he was
Exactly.
very interested in that kind of thing. Also, the flivver plane or the Osprey doesn't need a long runway. So you could theoretically land in the back of a giant shopping mall. So it would change radically how we handle air flight. I could see dangers involved too, but maybe with computers and we have these self-driving cars, maybe self-driving little tiny airplanes wouldn't collide with each other because the technology would be so great. Maybe he would get involved with that whole thing too, about how to avoid collisions if indeed each person had in their garage a little tiny airplane as well as an automobile.
Amazing. Mark J. Cipher, Dr. Mark J. Cipher, one of the foremost experts on Nikola Tesla, the books Wizard, The Life and Times of Nikola Tesla, Tesla, Wizard at War, and now The Man Who Harnessed Niagara Falls. Thank you so much for being back on Guys Guys Radio, Mark. You're always welcome here, and you have so much information, and you, like Tesla, are fascinating. So thank you so much. Tell everybody where they can find out more about you and get your books real quick.
First, want to thank you, Robert. It's just great seeing you again. I've just updated my website. It's called markcipher.com. And everyone, I've written novels and I've written a number of nonfiction books, including the Tesla books. They're all linked to little videos. So if you go to my website, markcipher.com, and go to any one of the books, you can also click right next to the book a video which explains the book. And of course, they all can be bought at Barnes & Noble or
Okay.
Amazon.
And it's Mark MARC Cipher S EIFER.com.
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Cipher. Great to see you again.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
All right, what a wonderful conversation, as usual, with a very nice man, Mark J. Cipher. He's written so much about Tesla. He's been on the history channels of Tesla Files and so much more. He really knows his information about Tesla and all the things that were going around him at the time of his life, more than like anybody I've ever encountered or read about. And Mark J. Cipher seems to be the world's foremost Tesla expert. I'm sure there's others that I'm not aware of, but Mark really knows his stuff. And I think you'd agree, what did we learn, that Tesla was probably one of the top three most brilliant minds of in the history of humanity. Again, Einstein and Leonardo da Vinci and probably Tesla in terms of just pure brilliance and technological discoveries. He's just unbelievable what he worked on. And as one of the things I think we learned was that beyond his incredible technological advances and discoveries that he made for peacekeeping and for just helping mankind with potentially even free energy, I think Tesla was a misunderstood individual. And he did so much, and yet he was, and I think his genius was recognized, but he was being stretched in every different direction from the powers that be, and from his kind of a frenemy, Thomas Edison, to the Westinghouse folks, to the people on both sides in World War, during the World Wars, and everybody wanted Tesla's information, and they wanted his advances, but they didn't want to give him credit for it necessarily, and they tried to really just pry whatever they could from him, and I don't know if he ever has gotten his due, as much as he's starting to get it today, and part of it, of course, is because of the car, the Tesla and Elon Musk, which opens up a whole other can of fish, but Nikola Tesla is one of the most influential minds of in the history of mankind, and we're delighted to talk about him today on Guys Guys Radio. Okay, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Guys Guys Radio on UK Health Radio. We're back next week with another great show. And until then, like I always say, guys, finish first.